Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Now that Representative Leon Lilly is here, we can begin our... So with that, I call the Legacy Committee, Finance Committee to order, and I believe a quorum is present, so we will begin. This morning we need to move the February 25th meeting minutes from last week, so Representative Vice Chair Scraba.
So moved.
Is there a motion on the floor? Is there a second? No, you don't need a second. This is Mason rules. Just checking with you folks to see if you know the difference between Robert's rules and Mason's rules. Okay, thank you for moving your minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Well, our roadmap for today is a very exciting meeting for my first chair. Chair Vang chaired last week and did a fine job. But we are going to hear from the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. You guys have been very busy the last couple of years, and thank you for all the good work. We're going to hear from their audit of the DNR's management of Outdoor Heritage Fund grants, otherwise known as the taxpayers' money. Then we will hear Representative Scraba's bill. He has a bill relating to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. We'll do that after the presentation by the OLA report. So with that, we welcome the OLA Legislative Auditor folks. We have first Lori Lason, Deputy Legislative Auditor from the Office of Legislative Auditor's Office. And then after you, is it Lason? Is that how you pronounce it?
Lason.
Yes. Ah, yeah, okay, very good. And then we'll hear from Mr. Baker, who's the Financial Audit Division Director. So with that in mind, Ms. Lyson, for the record, of course, you would state your name, and you may begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning, everyone. For the record, my name is Lori Lyson. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division within the office. Our report today is our performance audit of the Department of Natural Resources Outdoor Heritage Fund grants. Now, although the oversight responsibility for these grants are overseen by both the Lessard's Outdoor Heritage Council and also the Department of Natural Resources, our report is really focused on the Department of Natural Resources oversight over these grants. And specific to this audit, we really focused on those grants that are legislatively named. What you're going to see is that the Department of Natural Resources generally complied with the criteria that we tested. And when we're looking at our grants audits, if you have looked or heard about any of our recent grants audits, this report is actually a really good report. We have a couple findings. There's still some issues that we saw with oversight, but generally it really is a good report when it comes down to our grants oversight audits. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Baker. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lyson. Mr. Baker, state your name for the record, and you may begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Ryan Baker. I'm a financial audit director within OLA. Today, I'll be presenting the results of our performance audit of DNR Outdoor Heritage Fund grants that was released on January 15th. For this audit, our objective was to determine whether DNR administered Outdoor Heritage Fund grants in compliance with applicable requirements. And since Outdoor Heritage Fund projects take multiple years to complete, our scope primarily focused on grants awarded in fiscal year 2020 that were mostly complete or completed by January 31st, 2025. So first, before I get into the audit results, just some background on the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The Outdoor Heritage Fund is one of four legacy funds, as I'm sure you're aware, that receives a portion of the state sales tax, the other funds being Arts and Culture Heritage, Clean Water, and Parks and Trails. The state constitution provides that 3/8 of 1% of the state sales tax should be distributed to the legacy funds, with the Outdoor Heritage Fund receiving 33% of that 3/8 of 1%. So in the last 5 years, the funding from the state sales tax that was available to fund OHF projects was approximately $100 to $130 million per year.
Excuse me, Mr. Baker, could you have the microphone closer a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks. In order to obtain funding for an Outdoor Heritage Fund project, interested entities such as nonprofits and DNR submit project proposals to the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council for review. The council scores the project proposals and makes final funding recommendations to the legislature. Once the legislature awards the funding, DNR is primarily responsible for administration and oversight of that funding. This includes pre-award financial review, contract execution, monitoring, payments to grantees, and closeout of the grants. Lasard Sams also provides some monitoring of grantees, such as reviewing progress reports and approving those, approving parcels of the land for restoration enhancement projects, and approving accomplishment plans for each project. The awarding of the OHF money is done primarily through legislatively named grants to nonprofits or an appropriation to DNR. When DNR receives an appropriation for a project the department has been awarded funding for, DNR will choose to administer the project internally or partner with a nonprofit to complete a portion or all of the project. For this audit, we focused our review on grants administered by DNR, which also included single source grants in addition to primarily legislatively named grants. For this audit, we reviewed all grant agreements, amendments, and then grant payments for 13 grants. In addition, we reviewed DNR's payments to each grantee, as well as DNR's monitoring of the grantees for the entire life of the grants. Finally, we also performed a few site visits to determine whether the grantees' stated accomplishments and submitted progress reports could be observed at the project sites. Our conclusion was that DNR generally complied with the criteria we tested, although we did identify two findings, one related to grant payments and one related to grant monitoring. Finding one of the report relates to grant payments, and we found that for three grantees totaling approximately $400,000, invoices submitted for reimbursement did not contain enough detail to determine whether the expenses the grantee was requesting reimbursement for were for an allowable cost. Additionally, DNR paid approximately $5,000 to two grantees without obtaining detailed documentation to support the expenses the grantee requested reimbursement for. Finally, the last part of this finding is a broader issue that we identified for all OHF grants administered by DNR, and that is that DNR did not have policies and procedures in place to define an allowable cost. In addition, state statute requires that payments be made for activities that are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation, and DNR's policies and procedures also do not define what directly related to and necessary means. Finding two of the report relates to grant monitoring, and we identified issues with monitoring visits, progress reports, and closeout evaluations. For monitoring visits of the 13 grantees, we identified that DNR did not conduct all of its required annual monitoring visits for four legislatively named grants and two single source grants. For progress reports that were required to be submitted to DNR by legislatively named grantees and single source grantees, DNR made 10 payments to two legislatively named grantees without a current progress report on file. Those payments totaled $2.1 million. In addition, DNR also made 25 payments to three single source grantees totaling $2.7 million without also obtaining required progress reports from those grantees. Two of those three single source grantees were required to submit progress reports according to their contracts with DNR, but DNR did not specify the frequency with which the grantees must submit their progress reports. Finally, the last area was related to closeout evaluations. Of the 12 grants we reviewed for this area, we found 8 grantee closeout evaluations were missing elements required by OGM policy, such as whether there were any unresolved issues or concerns with the grantee, and whether the grantee's timeliness, quality of work, and overall performance were satisfactory. Of these 8 evaluations, 6 evaluations were completed between 72 and 790 days after final payment. And 2 of those grantees of the 6 received subsequent awards before the evaluations were completed. And then finally, for 2 of the 12 grants, DNR did not complete a closeout evaluation for one legislatively named grantee and one single source grantee. So as a result of the findings, we recommend that DNR obtain adequate documentation to support costs, work with Lizard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council to establish guidelines regarding allowable costs and activities, conduct timely monitoring activities and closeout evaluations, obtain progress reports before making payments, and strengthen internal controls over each of these areas. With that concludes the presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Baker, thank you very much. We have a question from Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the term I heard at the beginning of the presentation was generally compliant. And I think that we're all very aware of the expectation that Minnesotans have, and some would say heightened expectation of this legislature rooting out fraud in Minnesota's programs and grants. I heard a number of other comments, and I'm not sure that generally complied is the right word. It almost sounds like there might be more that we need to discuss. So I heard did not contain enough information, did not complete required site visits, evaluations were not completed. I think the case you just cited, up until 180 days after the final payments had been made to those that had received grants. So the money went out long before the evaluations were even completed. I'm going to be nice about this, members, but we're talking about processes that have been established for a long time. And you're going to hear this legislator voicing concerns about another subject area outside of the jurisdiction of the Legacy Committee, a community grants program relative to the ENRTF. And the reason it's relevant is because if this is some of the problems that we're hearing identified today in a subject area that's been stood up for quite some time, there's some crossover here, and I'm going to be addressing that over the coming weeks. The Environment Committee is going to have a hearing on Thursday talking about the grant program in the ENRTF, the community grant program, and the DNR's plan there to roll out in the neighborhood of $60 million over the next 2 years. So I'm glad that we're here in the Legacy Committee today talking about this particular report. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing the OLA in to discuss these problems. I would ask the testifiers if they, in addition to their report, had recommendations that we may need to act upon in this subject area, along with identifying the problems. Have you identified solutions that we need to be considering?
Mr. Baker or Ms. Lyson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We did not have any recommendations within our report specific to the legislature, but one thing that we have talked about in numerous reports that our office has produced is about legislatively named grants and the risks that exist when you legislatively name a grantee that doesn't go through that competitive process. So that's something that I think the legislature should be aware of. You know, when you're going through a normal kind of competitive process and you're kind of vetting through those applicants, you're really looking at their fiscal ability to move through that grant, obtain the money, spend that grant appropriately. You're looking at past performances. So when you're legislatively naming a grantee, that vetting might not be the same as it would be through a competitive process. So although we don't have any recommendations on our report directly to the legislature, that's something that I think that the legislature should consider.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's probably more that we need to discuss offline then, because I think that we do need to hear from the OLA and talk about what we could do to address some of these problems. The question I'm going to finish with is, in the grants that you reviewed, was there examples of payments going out prior to, so prepayments going out prior to work being completed?
Mr. Baker.
We did look for that, or sorry, Mr. Chair, members. We did look for that throughout all the payments we reviewed. We didn't see that. I will note that there was one payment for a project. It was an advance payment. So that went out before any work started, but that was unique to that project.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'll just point out that that is, I think, arguably a problem that needs to be addressed in the systems that we are not just discussing here today, but then also others, that community grants program specifically. I know that's not this committee's jurisdiction, but it's just something that there's crossover on as the community grants program in grants under $50,000 will be letting money out prior to any projects being completed. And I think we could probably all agree that that is likely to create an opportunity for those that might not have the best interests of Minnesotans in mind. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before I invite up Mr. Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR, and Ms. Robinson, Chief Official Financial Officer for the DNR, we have at this point two other members' questions, and we certainly will entertain more if you have it. First one on the list is Vice Chair Scraba.
Checks and balances that are supposed to be 10 out of 12 aren't done, 8 out of 10, 5 out of 8. I keep seeing these larger than normal that are not done right, and not done properly. And this is just a snapshot of the whole thing. I've been involved in lots of nonprofits, and when we do the audit, the internal audit, you just grab them, and then we get audited by the DNR. I was on the trail administrator, and you bring all your paperwork in, the DNR grabs a number and the number and it matches. Okay, done. We would pass all the time. There was no question whether it was done or not. When I look at this and I see how many are off, I mean, it's like, it's almost, and I won't say it's malfeasance. I'm saying somebody thinks somebody else is doing it. When you ask staff, you know, well, we didn't know we were supposed to do that. And now the correction is we're going to have a training program in October. We're going to get everyone on the same sheet of music. But are they? Is there a test that says, do you follow up on this? Do you come back and say, yes, you put some controls in, but are they working? Do they work? You know, my concern is when I see $650,000 that hasn't been spent on the grant since 2020, and it's like, okay, where is it? Why? And maybe they told you, but those are concerning to me, because when we give money away, we expect the project to be done. And I realize they have nine years. They have 9 years to fulfill the project, which is a long time, but follow-ups aren't done, nothing's done. I'm concerned. I'm in the Office of Grants and Management. They have rules in place, and those seem to be ignored too. So I'm critical to the point where Representative Heinzman is talking about the big round that they're going to go. Where's the check and balance? You know, I mean, this shouldn't be. What I read is disturbing to me. And I read it twice, and I'm just like, and then I read their response, and we'll take care of it, we'll fix it. Why do you have to be Pope to fix it? Shouldn't you have been doing it already, according to the Office of Grants Management, as you're supposed to be? So I'll let you answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Do you have an answer, or who would like to respond to Representative Scrubba? Vice Chair Scrubba. Ms. Lyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So we do follow up on our recommendations. We usually give the agencies 2 to 3 years to be able to make some changes and to show that they've made those improvements. So that is something that we'll do. And when we follow up, we don't do self-attestation, so we're not just simply asking, like, have you resolved this? We're actually retesting, so we're going in there. It might not be the same sample size. It may not be as robust as this audit. We simply don't have the resources to do that, but we will take a really good effort in doing some amount of testing to see that they've accomplished the response that they've given us in the report. And if you specifically, you know, for the one 700,000, I'm just going to round up. That was one that we were concerned about. That's one that we looked into, and it was an advance payment. And if I recall right, and Mr. Baker can help me, it really was the situation where they needed a match for the grant. And so sometimes I think you're hands are kind of tied and you need an advance on that. And some of these projects at the Department of Natural Resources do take a number of years. You know, if you're acquiring land or you're doing a multi-phase project where you're restoring wetlands, it's gonna take a number of years. And so in that case, we felt comfortable enough of where they were heading with it, but obviously it is a concern. It's kind of like the legislatively named entities. Advance payments are always a red flag for us as well. We don't like to see advance payments. There is that added risk to those.
Vice Chair Scrubba.
Chair, on page 15, 1415 progress reports, you know, Lassard SAM staff erroneously sent an email to the grantees stating that the progress reports due in February of 2020 did not need to be submitted. DNR reviewed the email as a granted extension and paid the grantees despite the past due progress reports. The DNR made all 25 payments totaling $2.7 million to the three grantees that were not legislatively named without obtaining any progress reports of those grantees. And again, some of these projects, I understand, you know, they did the work, they need to get paid, but the process, the part that the process isn't being followed is what concerns me, because yes, we can all agree that that match, shouldn't there be a placeholder with that 700,000 that says, waiting for a match, that's why it's sitting there. So we're not questioning, well, where's it going? How's it, well, you know, can there be some internal auditing that but just, you know, for me, 8 legislative named grantee closeout evaluation did not address whether they were any unresolved issues. 5 of these 8 were also missing grant purpose and description. Now, if you're internal and you're dealing with this every day, you already know. So you just kind of cavalierly let it go. But the OGM says, no, you have to do this. And the check and balance for me, every time I read this, there was something. It's just the cavalierness about not following the rules is concerning. That's all for me. Thank you, Chair.
Vice Chair, we have the luxury of having Ms. Randall here from the our legislative auditor. So, Ms. Randall, I see. Welcome to the committee. Thank you. And would you like to respond to Vice Chair Scrubba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Judy Randall, legislative auditor. Thanks for taking the time to hear this report this morning. And thank you for your comments, Representative Scrubba, and yours, Representative Heitzman. You know, you all are expressing the frustration that we share with you, right? You are correct that OGM policies require all agencies to follow, you know, thank you. Yep. thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Scrubba. I would agree that the expectations of the state are fairly common sense, basic routine activities that we would all expect our agencies to be providing to oversee taxpayer dollars. I would say in addition to the OGM policies, state law requires all agencies to comply with OGM policies. So, you know, it is also really clear in state law what the expectations are. And so I know this year there has been a lot of conversation among legislators about, well, what can we do, right? Where can we tighten up the law, or where, you know, what can we do, and frustration. And I would say the law and the policies already exist, right? And so the question is, how do we ensure that all agency staff are doing what we expect them to do? Now, I will just put a pin in that for a moment and note that we said that DNR generally complied rather than did not comply, because it wasn't the whole scope of grants management activities where we found problems. But, you know, I think it's a fair question, Representative Heitzman, on where the level of compliance lies. You know, I hate to say that we're getting jaded because we've seen bigger problems elsewhere. You know, we're human. I don't know. But I do think that the level of problems we saw at DNR in this audit are not at the same level as some of the things we've seen at other agencies. That doesn't mean it's going well, but it doesn't mean it's on fire. So I do want to just say that based on what we saw and the work we did. One of the tools that I think the legislature has and will have going forward is what Ms. Lyson was referring to, which is our update reports. This was something that you may recall was passed last year. It was in House File 3 in the House and got rolled into the state government omnibus bill. And so OLA is now required each year to go back and look at the last 5 years of recommendations and go in and independently verify to the extent we have the resources to see whether agencies have made those improvements, whether they've implemented the recommendations we've suggested. And then we give that report to you all. And so then it's information for you to then look at and say, okay, look, check, check, check. They implemented all these, but they didn't implement this one. The next time they're here in committee, I'm going to ask them about that, or I'm going to call them up, or I'm going to have a conversation. Now, there may be reasons where they haven't implemented yet for good reasons, but that's a conversation, right? So it's a new piece of information that you all now have that helps you to provide your legislative oversight and ask these good questions of state agencies. So it's not the silver bullet. It's not going to solve all the problems, but I think if everybody in the state is showing that, not everybody in the state, legislators and executive branch, you know, are showing like we're paying attention, we actually do care about this, the law is there for a reason, and we expect you to do it. And if you can't do it, tell us why, right? Let's have a conversation. Is it a resource issue? Is it you don't have the technology? Is it that the law is written poorly, right? I mean, there's lots of reasons, but let's have that conversation. And so my hope is that these annual update reports that come to you, I think by the end of January, we're required to get them to you, will be at least a help towards that effort. Thank you for letting me jump in here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Vice Chair?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And administrator, I'm in the camp. I don't want to pass more laws to fix this. That's not the issue. To me, the issue is following the law. How do we enforce the law that's there so that the bureaucrat that does the work says, it's not that big of a deal. But it is a big deal, you know, and it's part of the law. And management should be making sure that that is done. That's my two cents worth. Because in a real world, if we were in a business and 8 out of 10 didn't pass, I'd be looking for another job. There'd be no question. You know, the rules are there for a reason. Follow them. Well, and again, if they're not, then tell me. You know, we need more resources. That's ridiculous. You don't need to do that. Okay. You know, because again, what the past was and what the rules were are changing. Pretty dynamic right now. But to just basically for me say, we're going to fix it. We're going to have a meeting. We're going to correct everything. Okay. How? That's my question. How? So, and then when Bob gets here, when Commissioner Myers or whoever's here, I'll ask him that question. But I agree with your synopsis. Thank you, Chair.
Vice Chair Scarborough, you're welcome. I think something I want to make a comment before I call on Representative Cha that Ms. Randall said that's very important and pertinent and I think worth repeating. After being here for, unfortunately or fortunately, 16 years and seeing the OLA's report and reading the summaries and sometimes the whole report, some of them are real thick, but I think in the last 2 years particularly, or just this, probably 2 years, in particular, the OLA reports are very worth reading fully and thoroughly in lieu of the billions of dollars of fraud. And something you said, Ms. Randall, that you going back 5 years to look at the reports of the agencies to see what you suggested are implemented by the agencies. And if they implemented the recommendations, I think are very important. As I would just personally, as a lawmaker, because we are so busy with our committees and our assignments and our constituents and our businesses and our families, we're not able to look back to see your recommendations. Sometimes we'll have a bill based on your recommendations, and depends on who's in charge of here. We may or may not get a hearing. So your statement that you're looking back 5 years to see what recommendations, what agencies are implementing your recommendations, I hope the agencies are listening loudly and clearly, not just the DNR, because you're not in the hot seat as other agencies. You're in the hot seat a little bit, but not as much as other agencies. I hope and that they are listening. And with your help, we can help encourage that implementation. I agree with Vice Chair Scraba in this fact that we shouldn't have a law and have a new law, because we do that. We're lawmakers. I've seen some really egregious laws and some really good laws or ideas. We shouldn't have to always put a law together to have our agencies implement your suggestions to make sure that the taxpayers' dollars are spent wisely. Does that make sense, Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, I think that makes perfect sense. And I will note that in the report we released this year on updates, the vast majority of our recommendations had been implemented. So that's good news. Not all of them, but the majority. So I think we're on the right trajectory.
That is delightful, isn't it? That all the hard work that you guys do, that the agencies are implementing. So that's good news. Thank you, Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the performance audit. You know, if I go fishing and I kind of catch over the limit, I get a citation, a fine, right? It's pretty important to follow the rules. As I'm reading through this report, I'm just going to quote some of this. It says, did not always obtain adequate documentation, should obtain adequate documentation, should work with Lasard Sam, should revise, did not conduct required numbers, did not always conduct documentation, did not always perform, did not always obtain required progress report. I am concerned, along with my colleagues, about the stewardship of these funds and the accountability. I just want to make that comment. Thank you.
Representative Cha, that was good. Thank you. And yes, don't catch over your limit and don't fish without a license or hunt. And don't forget your license home. Okay, next on the list is Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming today and doing these reports. I think they're really valuable and appreciate it. I appreciate that you're looking at these funds, because they're different funds. You know, they went to the voters and they were approved, and they just feel different to me than taxes, and we make the decisions on that and where it goes. But just real quick, so it just, my sense is it's maybe, would you describe this as maybe not fraud, that we might see in other areas or have heard about on the news, but this might be just feels a little different to me, like we can do better work, a little sloppy, and I appreciate your comments, because I do, having served in this area, I know some of these projects take years and they're complicated. So it's not like you decide you're going to buy a car and you go out and buy the car and then you rate that experience or whatever. This is, it's tricky to buy land and to work with people. Anyways, I'm really grateful you're looking at it, but would you describe this as fraud at all, or is it just kind of they can do much better in the work and I are a little bit better? Can you give us a grade? You ever do grades? Like, I'm kind of a grade person. Like, is this a, you know, is this a B plus? Is this a D, or is it a, you know, A minus? Or anyways,
Ms. Lysons, Representative Lilly, his question gets an A in my book. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll dance around the grade, but what I will say is that, you know, we did not see fraud. We don't see indicators of fraud, so we're not concerned there. But what I can say is that through our audit and our review of the Department of Natural Resources, where I think this separates from other grant reports that we saw, is there are activities that are being done really, really well. So when they are doing a financial reconciliation, and Mr. Baker can tell me that I'm wrong, it was far more robust than I've seen in other grants, correct? And then there are some other monitoring that's happening. It's not the OGM monitoring, but monitoring of the projects. They do kind of a focus on a certain subject, and then they do some monitoring. So I think there's a lot of involvement with the Department of Natural Resources on all of these projects that just sets it aside from some of the other grants that we have audited. So I'm not giving a grade, but I'm just saying what might set this apart and show why we said something like generally complied as opposed to did not comply, because there were things that were a little bit more robust than we're seeing at other agencies. Do we have concerns when we have findings that there's not adequate oversight? Absolutely. That's always concerning. It's always something that should be addressed and should be considered as you move forward with any legacy grants.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the working around that. No, that was good. So I was lucky enough to serve on Lasard SAMS for, you know, quite a few years. I'm not on it now, but it's my sense was like the staff really did a good job of digging in, you know, and so maybe that's my bias, but my sense was that they were really trying to look into it, like the Lasard SAMS staff. But then, you know, so, and then most of the findings that I read quickly seemed like they're DNR. Was there problems like other grantees, like Pheasants Forever, or, you know, or is there like one organization? Because years ago, my sense was that there was a group that kind of goofed up on the North Shore somewhere. Sorry, Scraba, but it's true. And, well, they didn't get funds. You know, we decided they're not going to get funds. Like, you're in the, you know, penalty zone. You know, I think they figured it out and were able to get funds years later. But anyways, I'm just wondering if there's a particular group beyond the DNRs that could do better.
Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lilly, for the question. It's a really good and interesting point about Lasard SAMS staff being involved in these. They do provide a lot of that upfront review and vetting and are an extra set of eyes on these projects. But they're not in the executive branch, right? They're in the legislative branch. And the executive branch has specific responsibilities and duties. You know, the money is appropriated to the state agency. And, you know, as the fiscal agent, then DNR is really the one ultimately responsible for ensuring the funds are spent right. So while I think that there is an extra layer of protection, if you will, through the eyes of the LSOHC. Ooh, that was tough.
Good job.
Thanks. Staff, it doesn't solve all the issues. And then I would also just note that the focus of this performance audit was DNR. We did not, you know, audit Lasard SAMS as another legislative entity. We try to maintain our independence and not review the actions of other legislative entities. Thanks.
Very good. Co-Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Lilly pretty much said what I wanted to say. I think one thing I wanted to add was, you know, an elder once said to me, you can do 10 things right, but the one thing you do wrong, people are going to pay attention to that and say and remember you for that. And I want people to remember those 10 things that were done right. And it looks like that's what is shown here in this report, where you know, the money that was, I guess, a bit concerning was probably less than 1% of the hundreds of millions of dollars that has gone out through the council. And so there's clearly what the system that's are put in place for a number of years has been working to make sure that the dollars are going to where it is directed legislatively. And so I want to thank the council staff and the DNR for really being good stewards of our public's dollars. And of course, I mean, there's always room for improvement, but it's not, as the OLL say, it's not concerns for fraud. This report doesn't spell out fraud, and we shouldn't misconstrue it that way. So that's all I will say for now.
Important note, Chair Vang. Thank you. Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll kind of chime in with Representative Lilly and Representative Vang. As a member of Lasard Sams, I feel that staff does a great job, and the council itself reviewing these projects to make sure that they really do restore, enhance, protect the environment. But you mentioned, and this is a question for anyone, I mean, whoever wants to chime in here, but I'm curious your thoughts. You've kind of framed this up as more sloppiness, as Representative Lilly said, than fraud itself. But my concern would be, as we look ahead in the Environment Committee tomorrow, these community grant programs being stood up by the DNR, and the $25+ million that we're looking at there, does that sloppiness inevitably lead to the opportunities for fraud? And I think that's what we should be talking about moving ahead. Could someone answer that?
Who would like to handle that question or comment? Ms. Lyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think anytime you're not following the kind of foundation of policies and procedures that are set in place to oversee grants, you are creating an opportunity. You just are. If you have a grantee, if you're overseeing and you're an agency that's overseeing a grantee and you're seeing some things, you're providing some type of oversight, whether you're doing the monitoring but you're not doing the progress report, or you're doing a really great job with reconciliation but you forgot to do the closeout evaluation, I think there's opportunities still to have some controls in there that lessens that opportunity, as opposed to all of the controls being gone, right? They're not monitoring, they're not doing a fiscal review, they're not doing the closeout. So can it create that opportunity? Absolutely. I think we saw enough here at the Department of Natural Resources and in our conversations with them and our review of the grantees that I think they have the ability to do a good job in providing oversight and really just kind of clean up some of these pieces that are clearly important and need to be rectified. But I think that definitely that loop can be closed.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the answer. I just want to appreciate what you've done, appreciate that oversight. You're supplying us so that we can make these decisions. And I look forward to more of this conversation as we look at this new community grant program at the DNR. Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else have a question before we call up Mr. Meyer and Ms. Robinson? All right. Well, you folks, you'll probably stick around for a little bit before we end. Excellent. Thank you. At this point, I want to call up our Assistant Commissioner, Bob Meyer, and the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Mary Robinson. And I appreciate both of you here. We're sad that Commissioner Strawman couldn't make it, but she sent her very best, right, Mr. Meyer?
Always.
Always. So, well, we have many questions for you. However, welcome to the committee. What do you think, committee members? Do we want to start with questions, or should we have them respond to some of the OLA's report, or what? It's up to us committee members here. Or the chair's directive. Well, with that, Mr. Myers, I will give you the opportunity to state your name for the record because you know the drill. And if you have a couple of few words to report to us before we ask you some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR. And with me, I have our Chief Financial Officer, Mary Robeson. And we also have our Grants Director, Catherine Sherman-Honan, to detail questions if we need to get there. First and foremost, I want to say thank you to the legislative auditor and Director Randall. We appreciate their work so much. They're a vital part of our review process, part of the executive branch review. And we just take their work very seriously. I enjoy working with them, and we take their recommendations, as you can see within the letter, and all of our audit reports very seriously. And thank you, Vice Chair Scraba, for bringing up our agency response letter. I would just like to direct people to, you can see where we talk about our corrective action and completion dates. And all of our work will be done this year, June 30th, 2026, for our past updates to our pass-through grant reimbursement manual and internal payments checklist, July 8th for communication. We are having a large training for all of our OHF grantees on October 31st. That will be rolling out the new appropriations that will be coming through this session that the legislature does approve. So we do take these recommendations and all of our audit recommendations. You can go back and look at those dates, and we make sure that we make those dates and know that, and let the auditor know that we are making those dates as well. So we do take this work very seriously. Do we good at, do a good job? I think we do, as we heard from the auditor. Can we do a better job? Most definitely. Do we need to do these grants? The legislature gives us the authority to issue these grants. If the legislature has concerns, you can find somebody else to do those grants as well. So that's always an option. We take these on voluntarily with the compensation needed, because it does fit within our mission and direction. And it's a lot of our stakeholders that are there. But I just wanted to put that on the table, that if there are concerns about DNR making grants or awarding grants or administering these grants, there are always other options on the table. We have been working throughout our entire grant management program, updating our forms, procedures. You may hear from some of your constituents who apply for these grants that it's more administratively burdensome. We went from a 3-page document to a 14-page document on some of our pass-through grants for the Trail Ambassador Program, for example. And people don't like that, but that's the way it is now. There is a new day in grant management, as we all know. DNR takes those responsibilities very seriously, and we are raising the bar to make sure that we do those jobs very well. With that, Mr. Chair, Mary Robeson and us can answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the commissioner, unfortunately, she couldn't make it today, I presume.
Mr. Chair, unfortunately not, but she does present her the best regards. If you have a desire to hear from her, we can certainly arrange that.
Well, we'll consider that. We do have a chair before I call on Ms. Robinson, not like Jackie Robinson, Robinson. There's only one B. But before you introduce yourself and testify, we do have a question from Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll actually wait until the DNR finishes their response, if that's okay.
I'm sorry, what I was talking to Ms. Zipko.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, you'll wait.
I can wait.
She was correcting me on how to pronounce your name, Robison.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I do pronounce it Robison. I'm just too polite to correct Bob.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah, Ms. Zipko.
Oh, right now.
Thank you, Mrs. Robinson. Cuckoo, ka-choo, Mrs. Robinson. And you have the floor.
I do take both names. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today. As Commissioner Meyer stated, at the DNR, we do take very seriously the need for robust internal controls, not just in our Outdoor Heritage Fund grants, but in all our grant programs. And I just do want to highlight a couple aspects of our response and our corrective actions for the committee here today. As was commented by representatives, you know, we shouldn't be waiting for audits in order to make improvements, and we certainly don't. The DNR is committed to continuous improvement throughout our work, both identifying issues noted by our grant staff and our internal audit staff. And in FY 24 and 25, we've made numerous improvements, including improving our document retention practices, providing additional training to our staff, and updating our closeout procedures. And I just want to speak to that with regards to the OLA's specific recommendations. Regarding the first recommendation, that we should always have adequate documentation on payments on costs before we make payments, we certainly agree that those should always be in place. And we have laid out a number of corrective actions that, as Commissioner Meyer said, we will have in place by the time of the FY27 grants. Those include updating our DNR pass-through grants manual, our annual training webinars for grantees, and making internal checklist for DNR staff that they can use as they review reimbursement requests. We also want to make sure that we deliver annual training to both grant staff and grantees before those grants are rolled out, which we do every year. The second part of the recommendation is that the DNR should work with LSOHC to create comprehensive guidelines of allowable costs and activities for grants funded with OHF grants. Now, for OHF grants, I'm sure the committee is aware of this, but just to set some context, Minnesota Statute 97A.056 states that the LSOHC must approve accomplishment plans before any agency or entity can receive OHF appropriations. So that means under current practice, the accomplishment plans that the LSOHC approves identify allowable activities for every grant, and therefore from that follows the allowable costs. So therefore, our approach to overseeing allowable costs is to work with those accomplishment plans as well as the LSOHC developed budget guidance and work with the LSOHC staff as any questions arise. So we will happily agree to work with the LSOHC in offering assistance as they update their guidance, and I believe that work has already started on their end. And we will also be looking and revising our own guidance that DNR maintains internally to make sure that between the two, we do have comprehensive guidance available. And as I said, all these corrective actions will be in place before the FY27 grants. Regarding the monitoring, there are just a couple things I'd like to address, and then I'm sure we would open it up for questions. As noted, there were aspects of the report that stated that DNR did not always complete monitoring of some of the grants in the sample. I just wanted to make clear that when it comes to Outdoor Heritage Fund grants, we do have many, many open grants that go to the same grantees. So, for example, I believe the Trust for Public Land has about 40 open grants at the moment. When we have the same grantees that have so many grants open, the Office of Grants Management Policy does allow us to do a sample of those grants and monitor a sample of the grants rather than all of the grants. So part of the reason why there were grants in the OLA sample that we had not monitored is because those grants were not in our sample. The samples did not completely align. And we can answer more questions about that if you have it, but that is part of that reasoning. What we do need to do, and this was also noted in the audit, is make sure that we have our sampling methodology adequately documented and the resulting samples adequately documented so that when we do have an audit or we do get questions, we are able to demonstrate this is how we determine which grants to audit or to monitor in any given year, and this is the resulting sample. If we have more detailed questions about that, I'm happy to take it at the end. And then, as I've already noted, we've been working to improve our closeout procedures. I know there were some questions about closeouts. We've put new forms in place that were rolled out by OGM in April of 24. We do our best to always comply with Office of Grants Management policies. Sometimes there are changes, and recently there have particularly been changes in the closeout evaluation space, and so we have taken steps to make sure that those closeout evaluations are current. And finally, regarding the progress reports, the question of progress reports, I do want to just make clear that staff were working with grantees to monitor activities. We do have staff that work very closely with our grantees and partner organizations through collecting bid documents, photos, and other documentation, but it's that compiling it into that progress report, going above and beyond. And I think one of the representatives said, if you're working very closely with the grantees, maybe you lose sight of the fact that you need to make sure that that formal documentation is in place. And so as part of this audit and the resulting recommendations, we'll just be making sure that all our staff are taking that additional time to consolidate all that documentation they have into those progress reports that meet those requirements. And with that, I think we can take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson. I just have one question before I'll call on Representative Heinzman and Rabba has a question. I had a lot of why questions, but you answered them, Ms. Robinson, so that's good. And at this point, it's not necessary for all the why, because I think Chair Vang mentioned her comment was very important about the good things that you've done. But as far as site visits, do you believe that the site visits are important going forward? since so many or many were not followed through in the past?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as we go to questions, I'll probably ask Catherine Sherman-Horn, our grants manager, to come up and add flavor to my answers because she can probably give you better, more in-depth answers than I can. I would say, yes, we do believe site visits in general are an important part of monitoring and oversight. It's also important to note that they are not the only tool in the toolbox. They need to be used in combination with other types of monitoring to make sure that what you're seeing in the field actually is what you expect. So, for example, if you're going out to visit a site, how do you know that what you're seeing was actually paid for by the dollars that you're there to monitor? So it's a combination of on-site monitoring and making sure you have that adequate documentation.
Very good. Agreed. I think we're glad to hear there's more tools in the toolbox, but, of course, on-site visits are a lot more fun than the other tools. Nothing like a road trip to make sure to see the progress of these very important projects.
Mr. Chair, we do appreciate road trips.
And you'll do more, correct?
Yes. Mr. Chair, it's also true that road trips take additional resources, and so we need to make sure that we both fulfill our monitoring obligations and also live within our means.
So more resources, you're probably indicating more money, is that correct? I don't know.
Mr. Chair, it's a vital resource.
It is. Money makes the world go around, but it doesn't bring you happiness. Don't forget that. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a series of questions. I'll start with a comment. I do generally agree with Chair Vang that more often than not, I believe that we're getting most of our work done at DNR, but I will point out that $15 million in reimbursement requests were tested, and it was in that sample that we have the report as it was brought to us today, and the concerns that were raised based on quite a small amount of dollars that went out. So we're not looking at everything. I think the public needs to understand that. And this is something that we all hope is a accurate sample of the many hundreds of millions of dollars that are spent at the Outdoor Heritage Fund in Legacy. So that just has to be, I think, considered as we go through the recommendations and the findings. I'm going to start with, was just mentioned some of the allowable costs and the questions as to what that is. Mm-hmm. And in the report, we're seeing items like T-shirts, bumper stickers, laptops, so on and so forth. I didn't hear that specifically addressed. Have we figured out if those kinds of items are allowable or not?
Ms. Robinson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, in that particular case, I believe that was related to a grant in Voyagers. At the time when those questions came up about T-shirts and bumper stickers, DNR staff did reach out to LSOHC staff and talk about those and whether or not they would be allowable for the specific project. In that case, the T-shirts were to identify interns and volunteers that did not have uniforms but needed to have some sort of identification as not the public. And the bumper stickers were put on their cars in lieu of using DNR or other organizational vehicles to identify them moving around. So my understanding is it was allowable within that context, given the need for those specific items in that project, rather than, you know, a blanket allowable or not allowable statement.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And laptops?
Ms. Robinson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to call Catherine Sherman-Hillen up to address laptops for me. I need to
need some more spices, is that correct? Welcome to the testifying table. For the record, please state your name And you may answer this Representative Heisman's question.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Catherine Sherman-Hohen. I am the agency-wide grants manager for the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Representative Heisman, I do not actually recall what specifically the laptop mentioned in Outdoor Heritage Fund is for. In general, laptops are only something that the DNR would approve as an expense if it was clear in the accomplishment plan that was equipment that the LSOHC had approved and if it was for the work of the project. For instance, in restoration and enhancement, if a laptop were needed in order to be able to do the site evaluation work and track what kinds of components, what kinds of mapping and surveys were going on there. So we can look back at that specific laptop. I can get you a more specific answer later, but those are our general principles with that.
Rep. Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that these things are relatively trivial, considering some of the other examples outside of the discussion here today that have made headlines nationally. But I just wanted to see if there had been a determination on those items. Mm-hmm. Could any of you address prepayments and then also final payments being made before site visits are completed and so on? I think that if I could recommend or suggest a change, I believe that it would make a lot of sense in the private sector as a subcontractor on many, many hundreds of jobs over the course of the last 30 plus years. I never, ever see a final payment until a contractor site supervisor or what have you has confirmed that my work has been done. It seems bizarre that those checks would be written before there's confirmation that all of the parameters of the grant have been satisfied. And if you could address that, that'd be great.
Who would like to take that? Ms. Sherman-Hohen? Sherman-Hohen, correct?
Yes. Chair, Representative Heisman, in the matter of prepayments, the one that was mentioned was to the Army Corps of Engineers, which only works on a basis where it will not start work until it has all of the funding in hand. So that is not something that we would do with LSOHC dollars otherwise, unless approved by, again, the Lesser Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council if there were some other issue. I don't recall any other advance payments that we have right now. And I'm looking at LSOHC staff. So that one is an anomaly, but it's also standard operating procedure when working with the Army Corps of Engineers. And then the practice is with any prepayment like that, we require the grantee to provide us with progress reports at least quarterly on how the Army Corps is spending the funding, how the funding is, and how the project is going and the progress. So that if there are concerns, we and our partners at the LSOHC can catch them quickly and try and course correct and make sure that the funding is not in jeopardy. In regards to the site visits, I'm not sure if I could ask for clarification on which part of the report you're seeing that in.
Rep. Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a section in the report. It's on page 15. And if I have my information incorrect, if I'm misreading this, please correct the record. It's under closeout evaluations. DNR did not always perform closeout evaluations in accordance with state policy and did not always conduct closeout evaluations in a timely way. And then we found issues with 10 of the 12 grants we tested detailed below. And in the second, well, the middle paragraph, DNR completed those 8 closeout evaluations between 4 and 790 days after it made final payments to grantees. Is that specific enough?
Yes.
Ms. Sherman-Hohen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heintzman. Closeout evaluations are not where we do site visits. Site visits are done as part of monitoring procedures during the life of a grant. So by the time a closeout evaluation happens, site visits have already been completed, along with any other monitoring. A closeout evaluation comes after the final progress report and final report is given to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. So at that point, a closeout evaluation specifically just asks, did the work of the grant go well? Were there any issues? Were there any concerns about compliance? And in our case, we cannot complete a closeout evaluation until a final report has been completed. So we do not make final payments until all monitoring visits, site visits, other requirements are completed, and we know for certain that the work has been done. The main use of the closeout evaluation is in recording the progress and any issues on a grant, and using that to judge when we award other grants. In this case, when we don't have a closeout evaluation complete, because most of our grantees have multiple open grants, Mary mentioned one with 40. We have Minnesota Land Trust has 40 to 50 open grants at a time, and Nature Conservancy has above 30. There are quite a few in that. So we find that we use the monitoring evaluation so that we are actually looking at the performance during the life of the grant before we award a new grant. So we use those in conjunction with closeout reports. But in all cases, we are making sure that the work has been done before we release a final payment.
Commissioner Meyer, you better hold on to her. She's very good. She knows her business. Thank you for that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Anyway, Rep. Heintzman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I'll go back to page 13, since we're going to have a conversation. We're talking about monitoring visits. Middle of the page, monitoring visits. DNR did not conduct the required number of monitoring visits for four legislatively named grants. And then it goes on, two of those grants from a DNR appropriation. OMG policy requires that the state agencies conduct at least annual monitoring visits on grants over $250,000. Could you address that, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, yes, as Mary Robison indicated in her testimony, we use a sampling methodology for this, and the grants that were in question, their grantee was monitored during that year and every year. And a selection of other grants for that grantee were monitored. That grantee has about 30 open grants at a given time, most of which are on phased projects where you may have the same project in the same space with funding given every year. And then multiple of those years are open at once. So we did conduct monitoring on other phases of those same projects. So what we did not do, as the OLA indicated, is we did not have written sampling methodology to show how we were covering all of those grants. And for the non-legislatively named grants, as Mary Robison said, those are grants where the DNR staff work very closely with the grantee. They are in projects that they're working in tandem. It's usually soil and water conservation districts and the grantee and the DNR working together. So while we did not have a written monitoring report, they work doing monitoring activities, doing visiting on site, doing meetings with the SWCD to make sure that their progress and the DNR's were both adequate, and addressing questions of eligible expenses in those meetings. So we agree that we need to make sure that we have written documentation that shows all of this work that we're doing so that nothing can slip through the cracks.
Thank you, Ms. Sherman-Hone. Follow-up, Representative Heintzman?
Yeah, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, please.
It is okay.
Thank you. So when the OLA is determining in their finding two, the Department of Natural Resources did not always conduct and document the required monitoring activities of the Outdoor Heritage Fund grantees, and they're suggesting that this was required. Is DNR suggesting that in certain circumstances it isn't required?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, it is always required to conduct monitoring visits of grants. The Office of Grants Management Policy states that we can use the sampling methodology so that the sample stands for a monitoring, the sample of a grantee stands for monitoring all grants. In order to do that appropriately, we have to be able to show that we did use the sampling methodology to consider all grants. And that is something that starting in fiscal and fall of 2024 and 2025, the DNR as part of our continuous improvement process had also realized we were not doing and have already corrected our sampling methodology to ensure that. We used that last spring. We've evaluated to make sure that new methodology is appropriate and are making some minor tweaks to make it easier for our staff to complete. It was thorough, but a little onerous. So that is what we are working on this year, because while OGM policy allows us to use a sampling methodology, the point of that sampling methodology is to make sure that through that sample, you are assuring compliance on all of the grants that a grantee has.
Mr. Chair, just a final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the conversation, the background on some of this. It's helpful. I would just ask members to please keep in mind one of the answers I think is especially relevant considering some of the other grant programs that are being considered as they roll out. And I mentioned earlier the community grants program. We just heard today, I believe, that prepayments are, I believe, recognized by DNR as problematic and something that is being considered for grants under $50,000 in the community grants program. And I believe that there's a good opportunity for collaboration to work with DNR or with each other as legislators to address that so that we're not hearing an OLA report 5 years from now auditing another program that could very easily be exploited. So thank you for responses today. I think that the OLA report helps keep us all on our toes, and I hope that the letter that you submitted detailing the changes that are going to be made at DNR is adhered to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly?
Oh, I'm shocked. I thought we were going to touch Scraba. We skip Scraba?
No, we're not allowing Vice Chair Scraba to say any more words on this topic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming up and the work you're doing. I appreciate your opening comments, Deputy Commissioner Myers. Like, if we could find anybody else to do it, he wants to do the grant thing. That good luck for us or whatever. Kind of, these grant. In this space, legacy, there's grants that are going out, thousands of them probably, in the arts and cultural area, parks and trails. But I mean, there's just tons of grants. It's complicated. And I really value that, again, how I started with the OLA, that they're, stopping and taking a look. And again, I kind of go back to my original comments. I know the commission, when I was on it, they were looking at them, and I know that you're doing it, and you're trying to. I think generally we're doing a good job. There's a few places that we can do better. I love hearing your answers because I kind of look at it and like, oh, T-shirts, bumper stickers, and I'm like, oh man, what are we doing? Like, I'm like, I didn't vote for that. Like, and then you hear the answer, and the answer makes a lot of sense. It's actually pretty cheap than hiring a bunch of buying a bunch of new cars and then having them for the the Conservation Corps people maybe that go out, and then we got to buy t-shirts to keep them safe in Scraba's district in the woods so we can find them. And, you know, I'm kind of joking, but it's, you know, it, when you hear the answer, it actually was helpful for me, you know, so I appreciate that you're doing the grants. I appreciate, you know, I'm really glad that we're looking at these, everything in government and trying to do a good job, because I think all of us want the money to go out to good projects and good work. But, you know, at the same time, I wish we'd look at, like, outcomes, too. Like, I just don't think people, when you hear, like, you know, you look at one project, but these grants are so complicated that you're doing, because, you know, you're doing parks and trails, you're doing, you know, not parks and trails in this space, but you're doing, you know, prairie restoration and maybe a stream restoration, and it's a grant, and then who's involved, and there's so many, you know, and we encourage partners, partnerships, so the one grant was, you know, you had to prepay in this case, you know, I didn't know that, I should have known that, but, you know, that we have to fund it that way, but a lot of it's, you know, you're working with the U.S. government, you're working with private entities, you're working with nonprofits that are doing restorations. So it's complicated. I appreciate that the DNR is doing these, so thank you, and I appreciate that you look at them. I love the small grants. I mentioned that at a different meeting, you know, that's done in the Lasard SAMs, also with the big ones. So I know that takes a lot of management. I think the public would assume that you don't do any of this, you know, that you're out in making sure that we have, you know, good parks and trails and good fish and clean water to, you know, swim and drink, you know, or in Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota would know that you even do grants, you know, really, in a sense like this. But I'm glad we're looking at it. I'm sorry, it's kind of a rambling thing, but more of a comment. But, yeah, we probably can do better in a couple spaces. Sounds like you're looking at them and, yeah, take serious what the suggestions are and keep going, I think.
Very good. I'm going to ask the last question, then we're going to move on to, and then I'll give you an opportunity, Commissioner Meyer, to just say a few words in closing, and then we're going to go on to Representative Scraba's bill. But is it true or untrue that in the findings of the OLA that the DNR was unaware of the OGM's policies? That was surprising.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe I know which comment you're referring to. This was staff member who administers grants out of DNR Direct Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations that was not aware of the details of the progress report requirements. And that's where it comes down to the recommendation that we make sure that we fully implement formal progress reports to collect all monitoring. I believe that's probably the comment that you're referring to.
Yeah, that is correct, Mr. Robinson. It was on page 16 of the report. But Commissioner Myers did mention in his opening statement that, and I think you did as well, that you're aware of that. And by, what is it, 2027? Or was it even on this October that you're going to review, all your staff will be reviewing those OGM policies? So,
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That's why we're updating training for staff on this topic and making sure that they're aware.
See, we do listen to you. Hear you loud and clear. Commissioner Meyer, you have the last word before we move on to Representative Scraba's bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much. And Co-Chairman Vang, we really appreciate your comments as well, so thank you so much. And everybody's comments. Continuous improvement is not just a buzzword at the DNR. We take it very seriously. And in our grants management, you can see that is the case right now. I also want to thank the auditor for their work, LSOHC. We are going to get this right on the dime. I mean, we have a few things to tweak. We will get them done. And, you know, we are so blessed to have these legacy funds here, as this committee is aware. We want to make sure people understand that. They can see the great things that are done and renew this into the future. So that is our goal and our commitment, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Ms. Robinson and Ms. Sherman Hone. Is it Hone?
It is Hone.
Yeah, I'm right again. Anyway, thank you all. With that, Representative Scraba, Vice Chair Scraba has the...
Yeah.
Vice Chair Scraba, I believe that your motion will be to move the House File 3564 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
And I believe you also have an author's amendment. That's the one amendment.
Yes, offer that up right away, please.
Then in that case, Representative Vice Chair Scraba, your bill is now before the us. Please. Oh, yes, we should vote on the... have you all had a chance to read the A1 amendment? Any questions, comments, concerns? You want to vote yes? All in favor say yes. Yes? Aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Nay?
Aye.
Motion carries. Your bill is now before us in the shape that you wanted, Vice Chair Scraba, so please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Just a few talking points, and I'm going to let... I'm trying to... Director Mattson take over. But we're just updating the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commissioning enabling legislation. The bill extends the availability of legacy funds for specified projects in Greater Minnesota and the metro area. Some of the, just so everyone understands, the Clean Water Legacy Amendment projects have been incredibly impactful in Greater Minnesota. We have enabling legislation established the commission in 2013, and over time, the commission has developed and put systems in place. Some of the statutory language is just simply not relevant any longer, and it needs to be changed. The bill extends 5 legacy-funded grants that need a little more time to complete their projects, 6. We also have an amendment to the bill that extends this, that's the 6th one. And with that, I'm gonna let Director Mattson from the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trail Commission take over.
Thank you.
Ms. Mattson.
Thank you very much. I'm actually going to turn it over to our chair to start with. This is Rick Anderson, who is the chair of the commission and has been for a number of years, and he's going to address the information about our enabling legislation.
Very good, Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Before you, and thank you, Representative Scarba, for this bill. The two subdivisions that we'd like to get eliminated are Subdivision 3, which was the first appointments. This was done and completed in 2013, so if we could get that removed. The other one was the first meeting was convened as required by the commission, was scheduled, now is, we're scheduled on the fourth Wednesday of the month. In most months, meetings are posted on our website and the public is welcome to attend in person or virtually. And we follow all the rules as set down by the statutes for the open meeting with that. Next up would be Subdivision 5C, striking language in lines 1.19 through 2.4. As the commission has developed in the last 12 going into 13 years, processes have been reviewed and changes suggested to better meet the needs of the cities, counties, and tribal governments with facilities that may meet the standards for regional designation. Given the size of many counties, it's simply too onerous, expensive, and far-reaching to require a county to develop a district-wide plan. Therefore, development of a master plan specific to the park or trail considered for designation is much more thorough and precise. To achieve regional designation, the government unit must follow these steps: submit a designation application and achieve a rank of high. If the application receives that high rank, the government unit is asked to submit a qualified master plan following the steps and information that our commission has set forth. Specific to the public hearing language that is being stricken, a master plan must have a component of robust public engagement, not simply a hearing or taking place on a one day which is with interested stakeholders may or may not be able to attend. It is expected the plan will include a series of public input sessions to help determine what components will be included in the master plan so that everyone with an interest is able to provide their input. The master plan must also have a detailed development budget that discusses the cost of new features and acquisition. This process ensures a park or trail under consideration for designation is developed with appropriate public input and is developed budget that also addresses the cost of operations and maintenance over time. Moving on, subdivision 7, line 2.17. The striking of parks and trails and using projects instead describes the maturity over time of the granting process. No longer are grants limited to work only in parks or in trails, but broadened to allow for, as examples, grants for partnership projects so that multiple local and tribal governments can jointly receive a grant for equipment, for example, so they can save money and reach more people working together cooperatively to share the resources. Grants for track wheelchairs for accessibility. Grants to enhance universal accessibility, and grants to assist in costs related to the environmental or archaeological review. Moving on to subdivision 8, the commission chair and officers are currently elected annually, and we'd like to move it to biennial. And then with subdivision 10, rather than listing the grant recommendations in a priority order, it is preferable to list them by district. In the events cuts needs to be made due to lower than expected revenue collections, the reductions can be made across several grants rather than just cutting the lowest scoring grant or making a cut across the board. Conversations can be had to determine the best course of action for each particular grant. And I apologize, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Anderson, and I am chair of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner, Chairman. Any questions? Ms. Mattson, do you have?
I was just going to, Chair, just quickly cover the grant extension needs. And I should mention that Chair Anderson isn't giving himself enough credit here. He was on with the original committees that were writing the 25-year Parks and Trails Plan, and he has been on our commission since inception in 2013. So he's got a wealth of knowledge. He knows exactly how these everything works at the commission and why the language needs to be changed and updated to better meet our needs now. So great wealth of information here. Just quickly on the extensions that we require on the 5 grants and also the coordination among partners grant. Every year we have a few projects that need to be extended due to a number of different circumstances. Sometimes it's permitting takes longer, so a contract can't be gotten in a short amount of time. Bidding circumstances, I think you can all recognize, have been pretty challenging over the last couple of years. So projects that come in exceeding what was budgeted for often have to be rebid and get a better bidding environment at that time. So there's a number of unanticipated obstacles that sometimes come up when we're trying to complete a project. I just want to acknowledge that none of these projects are expected to need longer time than we're doing with these extra one-year extensions. They'll be completed, some of them probably by the end of the summer, but we just need to give them some runway. And in no instance is there a need for extra funding for any of these projects. They'll be completed with the budget that they've been given. And as far as the coordination among partners funds, those are funds that are 1% off the top of the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund that are intended to be used for projects that benefit all three entities that receive the Parks and Trails funding, DNR, Metropolitan Council, and Greater Minnesota. And if you look in this handout, our policy and planning report for 2025, there's a great example here of one of those projects, and that was our Minnesota Parks Artists in Residence project that was a joint project among the three partners that wrapped up this year. So on the middle pages, your foldouts, you'll see a great representation of the work that was done with those 1% off the top funds. It was really an amazing project that touched all three park systems. We had artists in residence for a year. They worked heavily with the public in the communities that they were involved in, getting their feedback for different art projects in a number of different parks, well, three parks in each of the systems across the state. And it was wildly successful. It was just a really great project. And we'll be doing 2.0 of that this coming year. We learned a lot of things in that pilot project. So this will expand. And those funds that are being extended were actually intended to be spent a little bit earlier in this project, but it took longer to wrap it up and get the bidding documents ready, the RFP ready for this next round. So much of those funds will be extended on time, June 30th of this year, but we don't want to lose the remaining funds that might be left if things just don't go according to plan.
So those are our projects that we're looking for extensions. It's pretty critical to get those done because the dollars just don't come back to us. They go to the top and trickle down, and we'd rather see those projects done and people enjoying them as they're intended to be. So thank you very much. If there's any questions, we can address them.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Mattson. Any questions from committee members? Representative Lilly? Representative Scrava? Do you have a closing statement?
No, I think everything has been said. The extensions are pretty self-explanatory. The change in the languages, hopefully we'll be able to act on this year, but it passes out, or we're just moving it up and putting it on the agenda for the future.
Very good. Thank you, Vice Chair Scrava. So you renew your motion that House File 3564 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. How far in the future, Vice Chair Scrava?
Oh, I'm thinking maybe a month and a half.
No. We're going to have this sooner than that, Representative Scrava. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Oh, wait, you don't have to vote. We're just laying it over.
Laying over.
Let's vote for anyway. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
You just wanted to bang the gavel.
All right, if there's no other business before the committee... That was a question mark.
So,
if there's no other business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned.
Was companies within